Okay, so first of all, we're going to be discussing really two things in this Chazarish year that are like somewhat interconnected. So I hope to get to the second one. I guess we'll see like how much time we have. But the main topic that we're going to speak about today is titled Ilat Get, or Ilas Get. So for all the non-Gush guys here, Shalvim guys who obviously are befuddled by what the word Ilat means. So I confirmed with VBM, actually, that has a sugya by this title. So apparently, like, grounds for gerushin, or like grounds for divorce, that's like how you call it, Ilat Get. First I was going to be like Tanayim LeGerushin, but like I feel like that would just be confusing, so Ilat Get is what we're going with. Okay, fine. So first, just to start out with like some basic framing questions. So in order to understand those questions, first let's just go through the most basic piece of background in the sugya, which is the Mishnah in Maseches Gittin on Daf Tzadi Amud Aleph, that the Mishnah reads, Beishamai Omrim lo yigarish adam es ishto elam kein matzaba davar erva shenamar ki matzaba ervas davar. So Beishamai holds that the only seemingly the only justification to divorce one's wife is if he finds in her a davar erva, which, as the Gemara at the beginning there explains, it means that two edim actually are able to prove that the man's wife committed real znus, pashtus as an ashes ish, and that is the only case where the Baal basically has a right to or has proper ground to divorce his wife. Okay, so that's Shita Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel Omrim, afilo k'dicho tavshilo, shenamar ki matzaba ervas davar. Beis Hillel, so on the surface it says afilo, which on the surface seems like Beis Hillel is just being a little bit more expansive. So Beis Hillel says, grounds for divorce are even if she basically burns the food. As the pasuk says, ki matzaba ervas davar. And as the Gemara explains, Beis Hillel has a drasha that it's o erva o davar, that he agrees with Beis Shammai that obviously erva will be justification for divorce, but he thinks in addition, davar, basically any matter, at least related to the realm of etichot tavshilo, she burns his food. So obviously, I think already on the surface, nobody thinks that Beis Hillel just means burning the food. I assume it means, you know, she does potentially other things that, you know, that do bother him. That doesn't necessarily mean I'm saying anything that's a chiddush. I'm not expanding Beis Hillel so much more. I'm just saying that on the surface, I don't think anyone would say that it literally is only where she burns the food. But it's possible. And then Rabbi Kiva Omer, afilu matza acheres nahaymeno shenamar v'hayim lo timsachin be'inav. So Rabbi Akiva reads the first part of the pasuk and says that grounds for divorce include even if he just basically, if she does not find favor in his eyes, understood to mean that he basically finds someone else, Natsa Isha Acheres Nahaymena, he finds another woman on the surface, it's more beautiful, more pleasant, more fitting. Okay, so it seems like the pashas of the Mishnah is that it's increasingly getting more expensive, as also the word say afilu. Beis Shammai says the simple, narrow grounds for divorce, Znos. Beis Hillel is a little bit more expensive at Tichu Tav Shilo. And Rabbi Kiva seems like the most expensive, afilu matza acheres nahaymena. Okay, so just to bring up some three basic framing questions. So the first question is this entire sugya basically just like what I'd probably call, you know, like a good Midos Tovos thing? It's more really about like the interpersonal relationship between the parties. Basically what, like, if you'd ask anyone in the Beis Medrash, that's probably what the Pashup Shad they'd say in the sugya is, that very simply, it's just a question of, like, is it fair to divorce one's wife if she didn't do anything wrong? She didn't commit znus, she didn't burn the food, he didn't find anyone else necessarily better than her. So it's just not really fair to her to divorce her in that case. It's not right that we would allow him to divorce in such a case. Or do we say that maybe the sugya and the grounds for gerushin are a little bit more internal? They're about, like, the institution of gerushin, more specifically ishus, really, and gerushin, basically saying that we have specific grounds for gerushin, mitzad the ishus itself. And I think, like, a good way of putting it is that, like, if you haven't reached the bar yet of, let's say, znus or etichot tavshilo, or matzah acheres nahi mena. If you haven't reached that type of situation in your marriage, so then the marriage basically just objectively should not be ended. And in contrast, if you do reach those thresholds and you're in a situation of marriage, what I would call, let's say, a bad marriage, just like for terminology's sake, I'm going to refer to that as a bad marriage where you like cross the shita's thresholds. Like if you have matzi acheres nahi mena, or you have ikdichot avshilo, or if you have znus mamish, matzabayar vastabar. So I'm just going to refer to that as like a bad marriage, and if you don't have those things, then you're still in a good marriage, just to like keep things simple across all the shitos. So anyway, so as I was saying, so it could be that mitzad the gerushin and ishus itself, that if you're basically in a good state of marriage, the ishus objectively should not end, while if you're in a bad state of marriage, if you've reached a threshold in the conditions of one of the tanoim, so then basically like from the ishus itself, the marriage is basically like calling out to be ended. Objectively, it should be ended. But not an interpersonal thing about what's fair between the husband and wife. Okay, so that's the first question. Second big question is, what exactly are these three shitos in the Mishnah? Are they like kipshuto as they sound? Can they be a little bit more expansive? And if so, how? Third question is, once we understand what these three shitos are really about, so what might they say about ishus and gerushin more generally? Obviously related to the first question, assuming that the sugya might touch upon something really gerushin related and probably not just about the interpersonal relationship between them. So what exactly do the yoshitos say about ishus and gerushin more generally, about how easy or hard it is to end the ishus? So what does that say about how you view marriage? Okay, so in terms of the first question about whether or not the sugya grants for gerushin are about like an interpersonal problem between them, expectations between them, versus like objective internal standards of ishus, so we have a few indications. And also just like define what I mean. So like, I think I did this in my first Chazarashir also, where basically just to like, we'll, you know, say these terms a lot, like Kedushas Ishus and standards of the Ishus. So just to like define a little bit what exactly they mean, and just like reiterate, the idea being that like we view Ishus in a little bit of a more aspirational way. That it's not just like a practical arrangement between parties. It's not just a Gzeres HaKasuv. It's not just like a Heter Tev Bia in the halachic sense. But rather, it's a Davar Sheva Kedusha that represents like a real set of unique values, such as, just again, name a few, like raising a family, Shalom Bayis, investing in a relationship, which is very obviously important for this sugya, respect between them. And that's going to impact the grounds for Gerushin. That the Ishus itself is a Davar Kadosh that demands investment when the marriage isn't so bad yet. And on the flip side, when the marriage is very bad, so the Ishus itself, as a Davar Sheva Kedusha, should not be something that's spoiled. And in that case, you objectively should end it. Okay, so in terms of this question about the interpersonal part versus like the internal ishus part, so you have a few indications. So the first is the Tshuvas Haran, who is mechadish that this, which is quoted in the Ramah, that the Tshuvas Haran is essentially mechadish that this entire sugya is limited to just bal karchach. When the man divorces his wife against her will and she doesn't give consent, so when she does give consent, so the Ran is mechadish that basically, and Rabbeinu Gershom says the same thing. That when the wife gives consent, basically this whole sugya is off. We basically have no requirements, no standards. If the woman agrees that the man is allowed to give her a get, so then it's totally fine, kosher, mutter, lechatchila. So that on the surface, and obviously the pashtus, right, is not like that. Like the Ran is, it's a chiddush, meaning we'll get to the svar in a second, but just you wouldn't necessarily have thought that. The Ran is a little bit of a chiddush. And the Pashtus is probably, for those who don't say that, likely hold that even if she gives consent, we still have these standards and specific grounds for gerushin. So in terms of this like bigger question, so which sheet does on which side? So the Pashtus is the Ran sounds like it's more of like an interpersonal thing between the parties, and that's why it's probably okay to divorce her if she gives consent, because it's not unfair to divorce someone. In general, the problem is like being fair to her, but it's not unfair to her if she allows you to do it. And on the flip side, the shitas that think that the grounds for gerushin apply no matter what, they likely think that this is like an internal gerushin, ishus type thing, and therefore, even if she gives consent, that doesn't mean that the gerushin itself deserves to be ended. It's still something that objectively both of you should be investing in, even though she has given consent. It's not necessarily 100% mukhrach that that's the case, but that's likely the direction that you would go in. Similarly, there's a machlokas quoted in the Mishnah Melech versus the Knesset Agadola, regarding whether or not this entire sugya is like a bona fide iser slash mitzvah, and it's like very, very halachic, or it's more just as the Knesset Agadola says, an Eitzah Tova. Isser versus mitzvah, meaning that, like, again, when you're in, like, a bad state of marriage, so then it's usher. When you're in a good state of marriage, so then it's usher to get divorced because you haven't hit the thresholds yet. While if you're in a bad state of marriage, so then it would be a mitzvah to get divorced. Well, the Knesset Gedolah says no matter what, it's an Eitzah Tovah, meaning when we tell you to get divorced, it's an Eitzah Tovah. When we tell you not to get divorced, also an Eitzah Tovah. And again, so these shittos also, just like on the surface, line up with these two ideas, that if you think that the whole sugya is just an Eitzah Tovah, so then you're likely to think that it's more like an interpersonal thing between the parties. While if you hold that this is like an iser slash mitzvah, so then it's likely to stem from something that's a little bit more halachic, not just about like really what's fair or wrong to the woman or like okay for the husband to do, but rather something that's more like objectively halachic and internal, like a gerushin type thing. Again, also not 100% mukrach. You could like play with those shittos a little bit with the svaras, but I think on the surface, that is what we were trying to say, and that's what I think does make sense. Okay, the third piece of evidence is the Mishnah Melech's discussion about whether or not this sugya is dafka a couple that's gone through nisuin, or even min ha'irusin. That the Mishnah Melech quotes a shita that thinks, does anyone remember who it was? Who is it, the Maharshtam? I feel like they're all the same in my mind. But yeah, okay, Maharshtam. So the Maharshtam is quoted in the Mishnah Melech as holding that the whole sugya is basically only min ha'nisuin and not min ha'irusin. While the Mishnah Melech argues, he says, I don't understand why would one be machalik. Of course, whether they're partially married through erusin, fully married through nisuin, these standards of gerushin should always apply. And again, this discussion also seems to line up with this like more general chakira that if you think that if you want to be machalik between erusin and nisuin, so that needs to be explained. For the Mishnah Melech, who thinks there's no difference, I don't think you can really say anything for him because I think that's just the pashtos. But for the shita, who is again the Maharshtam? Okay, I'm not going to get that straight. You guys are going to have to keep saying it. Okay, the Maharshtam. If you hold like the Maharshtam, who's mechalik between erusin and nisuin, so you kind of have to come up with a svar. Like, why do you be mechalik? At the end of the day, they're married. So the point is that the more you think that this is like an internal ishus type thing, that we have certain standards of ishus which demand the marriage to be an investment. If the marriage is still good, but if the marriage is bad, we objectively demand the opposite, that the marriage should be terminated. So at that point, you at least leave it open to think that we could be mechalik between Yisun and Erusin, because at that point you'll say objectively, maybe Erusin is only, right, a mixas Nisuin, or it works even better if you say that Erusin is the opposite, right? Like we've been developing that it's like an Oser, it actually creates some form of distance. Don't want to get into that too much now, but just the simple idea that Erusin is not as much Ishus and it's not as complete as Nisuin. And therefore you might say that our standards for like grounds for Gerushin might be like a little bit less, we might be a little bit more hands-off. Okay. And then the Shitas HaRambam. So I know normally like the Shitas HaRambam is like the build-up, like, Rav Rosenzweig usually likes to do it at the end and it's like climax, but like we're just going to do it first because I think it just makes sense like structurally. Because he like really touches on I think this question. That the Rambam seems to be a little bit like in between on this question. That he doesn't seem to think that this is like a classic mitzvah in the Taryag sense. As we've been pointing out, he specifically thinks that the mitzvah is like the ksivas haget, the methodology of the get, and he never really references this this sugya, grounds for gerushin, as like a mitzvah to get divorced or an iser to get divorced, whether it's a good marriage or a bad marriage, again. So he doesn't necessarily seem to think it's a mitzvah 100%. He does use the word mitzvah in one context, which Rosenzweig felt was lav dafka. That's probably an open question, but in the context of the Rambam there, it does seem to probably be lav dafka. But either way, on the surface, it sounds like in general, the Rambam veers away from saying that this is a real mitzvah. But at the same time, does that mean that he thinks that this is just like an interpersonal thing between them about midos tovos, about him doing the right thing to her? So it does seem to be a little bit more than that. It seems to be that it is something that's somewhat internal about the institution of gerushin. It's just not on like necessarily the formal isser and mitzvah level, but rather more about your general orientation towards and posture and attitude towards like the institution of ishus and gerushin. So Rai is for this idea. So again, he seems to think that it's not a formal mitzvah or isser because he doesn't count it in the Taryag. In the Koteris, he doesn't seem to mention this. And it rose into the fact that he like delays this all the way very, very late into Hilchos Gerushin when many seem to have it up front at the beginning. And even within the halacha where the Rambam discusses it, he throws it in the middle, in the midst of a bunch of other things like Kiddushin al-Manas Lagarish, and a Grusha Salev. So it seems to be, it's like chucked in the middle of things and it's delayed very far. So it seems to be he veers away from the formal mitzvah slash isser route. But at the same time, the Rambam at the end of the day still has the grounds for Gerushin in Hilchos Gerushin. Right? It's not in Hilchos Deos. And we prove that he could have put it in Hilchos Deos if he wanted to. As we know, the Rambam has something else in Hilchos Deos related to marriage, namely when he's talking about Tashas Hamita, that a Talmud Chacham shouldn't be Matzah B'Isha Katarnagol, talking about the Gedarim for how often one should have Tashas Hamita. Without getting into the specifics, it's just clear from there that the Rambam could put marriage-related things in Deos, and if he specifically chooses to put this in Gerushin, then it probably has something to do with the institution of Gerushin specifically. Again, not necessarily in the formal halachic mitzvah iser sense, but more in a broader orientation type sense about how you relate to the institution. That we're basically saying as like a message, and what your mindset should be is that you should invest in the marriage as much as possible if it's still a good marriage. Once it gets to a bad marriage, you should specifically end it. Again, though, not on the formal mitzvah slash iser level. And Rav Rotzlag thought that that was specifically mochach because the Rambam also puts it amongst a couple of other things, which also really touch on the institutions of Ishus and Gerushin and Isurei Bia. That he talks about Kedushin al-Manas Lagarish, he talks about Grusha Salev within the same halacha, and those things, Rav Rotzlag was into the fact that the Rambam like diffuses those things, meaning that he like spreads them across Mishneh Torah, that he has Kedushin al-Manas Lagarish, he mentions it in Hilchos Ishus as well, showing you that it's a problem on one's orientation towards Ishus and Gerushin, that you should not be in a marriage where you plan on getting divorced, because that's obviously reflective of an extremely poor marriage and a very bad mindset towards marriage itself, and also Gerushin, that you plan on using Gerushin just basically to like give yourself this like safety route where you could basically just like be in the marriage as like a heter bia and then just get out of it whenever you want. Similarly, Grusha Salev is mentioned in Isurei Bia. Also an issue about being just using the marriage as like a heter bia, and it turns into like its own Isurei Bia of sorts because you're just having bia, albeit it's in a technically kosher way because you're within marriage, but conceptually or like more holistically, still a very, very problematic bia in terms of like your mentality. So the fact that the Rambam throws in the sugya of Da'at Sadi within those other things, which he diffuses in general, shows that it's about the institutions, not just about, purely about one's midos. Okay, so that's in terms of the Shitas Rambam. Okay, so then getting to our second framing question about what are these Tanaim, oh yeah, Ariel.
Did Rabbi explain why it is that something's wrong in Gerushin as opposed to Ishus?
Yeah, somewhat. So let's say, you said Gerushin versus Ishus?
Yeah. Meaning, like, if we're developing this concept of like, Ishus being a broader global concept.
Yeah.
Then, obviously, for Nashen, then there should be...
Yeah, so the only one I think that we quoted that comes up in Ishus was Kedushin al-Manas Lagarish. So I think that makes sense to be in Ishus because that's about Kedushin. The other thing is, like, Grusha Salev. So you're already in the marriage, so it's okay, I think, to leave that out of Ishus. That was more specifically with the Isurei Bia, right? Because you're continuing to have Bia while you're married. But you're not, like, getting married again. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think he, like, explicated why certain things are not in Ishus, but that's my inclination. Okay. So, again, getting to the second framing question in terms of, like, what do these Tanayim actually hold? So I thought that it could, like, be broken down into, like, three broad categories that Rabbi Rosenzweig also mentioned at points as well. The first option being that there's, when you read this Mishnah, again, like, push up shot, walk up to a guy in the Beis Medrash, say, like, what's your take on this Mishnah? And I think they're going to tell you that, yeah, on the surface, it seems like Beis Shammai has, like, pretty limiting grounds for Gerushin, while Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva are kind of in their own camp and have, like, these more trivial views for Gerushin. Push up shot, kipshuto, it's just very simply that Beis Shammai thinks that there's just one case of Znos Mamish, while Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva indeed say something that seems like maybe a little bit like shallow or surface level, that you can even get divorced for like these little small things. So that's one option. Even within that option, we'll see in a second that itself even might be saying something a little bit deeper, more fundamental, and you might be able to expand it a little bit more. But just on a pshat level and like on a shita level, that option is assuming that these three shitos are as they sound, pasha pshat. Second option is that the Mishnah is actually representative of like three broader categories, that on a pshat level, the shitos aren't as they sound at all. That it could be that Beis Shammai refers to like a category of znos. It's not just znos mamish, as we'll see. There are those that are expand Beis Shammai to include many category to include many cases. So it's like a broader category of znos. And it could be that Beis Hillel mentions ekficho tavshilo, but that's really just like, you know, his way of labeling a category of where there's some, an issue of like merit, rebellion by the wife, or she's negligent, or there's something like very hostile going on in the marriage. She has like a particular perception towards like fulfilling her roles in the marriage. And there's like something off about the marriage. So that also might be like a category. And then Rabbi Akiva would be a category of kind of like she has maybe midos ra'os, or there's a sense of like incompatibility between the husband and wife. But again, just not pashup shot. It's not that just matzah cheres na haimena. That's kind of just like the label or like the catchphrase for like this bigger category. Okay. And then there's a third option, which is you can be mechalek between the shittos. So Rosen's like kind of like doing this like throughout the shiurim. He just kind of like drops these lines like, oh, you can be mechalek between them. But like, I'm just going to kind of like go really within the first two options. And then like also like along the way, I'll point out where you can be mechalek between the different tanayim. Because most of the Rishonim, like, aren't necessarily... Well, we'll see a few, but the default is that most Rishonim aren't necessarily mechalik, nitty-gritty between the Tanayim for these bigger issues. And we'll point out where they do. But okay, so just first to address Shitas Beis Shammai. So the question regarding Shitas Beis Shammai, related to our original framing question, is the following. So is Beis Shammai like a specific requirement of Znus Mamish, having Beis Edim, testifying that she basically cheated on him and broke the marriage, which is obviously very, very limiting? Or do we say that he's a broader category of Znus, which can be more expansive and include more cases? So just on the surface, like, what would that say about Kedushas Ishus, just like before we move forward and like show the evidence? So in this case, I think it's actually interesting that if you take Beis Shammai, like the first option, like Pashup Shat, he's actually like very limiting grounds to Gerushin, so then Beis Shammai is actually saying something very aspirational about Ishus. Because then Beis Shammai is essentially saying that, in a sense, Ishus is kind of like permanent. And it really can't end just based off like choice of the husband to end it. But rather, it only ends when like objectively it ends on its own. When she cheats on him and then there's an Isser somewhat for them to live together, as we'll discuss. So that's actually saying something like very aspirational about Ishus if you take like the limiting view in Beis Shammai. But therefore like the more Rav Rosenzweig thought that like the more you expand Beis Shammai to include other cases, so you're kind of like de-emphasizing that idea where it's like very objective internal standards for Ishus and Gerushin more specifically. But it should be noted that, like, even if you do expand Beis Shammai, so that doesn't fully take away from, like, his aspirational orientation. Like, at the end of the day, he's likely still going to have a different orientation than, like, Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva, because it's still going to be somewhat within the category of Erva, and not these, like, lighter categories. Again, we'll show him maybe they're not so light, but certainly just on the surface, it seems like Beis Shammai is more Znus-related. Okay. So obviously the way to understand Beis Shammai is to go through the lens of the Yerushalmi. That the Yerushalmi asks what seems like a bomb kasha on Beis Shammai, which is that if Beis Shammai thinks that there's only one case for Gerushin, which on the surface he does, he thinks it's literally just Znus Mamish Bebeis Edim and nothing else, and he doesn't even think that a get can be chal in other cases, big assumption, but on the surface that is how it seems. If that's really the case for Beis Shammai, so then, what is the Torah doing by saying that there's an Isser of Machsi or Gushoso? It seems to be superfluous, because at the end of the day, substantively, there's already an Isser for you to remain together. If she really is a Zona and committed Znus, so then it's Usser for you to live together as it is. So what exactly is the Torah doing by adding an Isser of Machsi or Gushoso? There's never really going to be a lav for Sota. I mean, sorry, there's never going to be a lav, necessary lav of Machsi or Gushoso. Okay, so there are a bunch of ways to answer this question of the Yerushalmi. So first, let's do the answer of the Yerushalmi itself. Yerushalmi itself, at least the way our gears has it, says that what the Torah is doing is it's adding a lav on top of an aseh. I think the Lashon is like lav or a lav, aseh b'lav, or something like that. So basically saying that there was already an aseh for the Isser Sota, and now we're adding a lav. So the question is, what does the Yerushalmi mean when it's saying we're adding a lav? So I think probably when most of you read it, you probably thought, and as I thought as well, that it's just saying that the Isser Sota remains as an Isser Aseh. And what the Torah is doing here is telling you that in the case of Machsi or Gushoso, if the guy goes and remarries this woman who cheated on him, which still fits within the case of Beis Shammai of divorce, where she cheated on him. So in that case where there is Nos Mamish, specifically if you go and remarry her, so then you're going to violate a lav. So that's a big chiddush of the Torah to add a lav to such a case, because previously it was only an ase. Very simple answer. But I assume that that's how most guys probably read it at first glance, that it's just an ase of sota and then a lav of maxi grushasa. Kind of some laughs over here, so maybe not.
No, we read it differently, but...
Okay, so... Probably... Right, okay, so Rav Rosenzweig also read it differently. So shkayach.
No, but that...
Not that, yeah.
Did Rav Rosenzweig mention this reading, what you just said?
Yes, he did. And I also asked him about it, and he said that, like, yeah, you could think that, but to get to in a second, it's difficult.
Because it doesn't mention this, so, like, in the Pasuk of Maaseh Grushasa.
You're saying why would that read be difficult? Ah, so I think we rejected back to like presentation mode. You know, we're out of that question. So I think Rav Rosenzweig didn't like that reading the Yerushalmi because I thought he finds it hard to believe that what comes out is that there's no lav for sota.
Meaning you would have to say it's not focused on the Yerushalmi.
Something like that. Yeah.
What's this a say of sota?
So that's learned out. That's the Gemara in Yevamos on Daf Yod Aleph about v'nitma v'nitma. Seems like it's a drasha that there's an asay that when she was nitmes, so then there's an asay that you cannot live with her. And if you live with her, you will violate an isur asay.
Asay is to bring her to the phone.
The asay, because this is a case of Znos Mamish. So she's not. So the assay, I guess, is to divorce her. Like you would think on the surface, but that's difficult because we're within that question. So I'd say probably there's not actually like a positive kiyum of it. Meaning, let's say like abstaining from having bia with her. Like on a simple level, you could say that. Yeah.
It's not without Aiden. Since you get killed.
Yeah, we're talking about before. We're talking about before Gemardin.
Before what?
Before Gemardin, no Hasra.
It's just
you can get out of that.
Days
could be, yeah.
Or no.
Could be that also.
I think the example
we're
gonna
give
is just
Asra.
No,
Asra,
let's say.
That's your
factor
code,
but there's no Asra.
Yeah, we'll go over the like the YU personalities. What? Yeah. You guys can talk that out after, I assume, right? Okay, good. Yeah. Anyways, okay. So yeah, it's probably just a case. It's probably just a case without Hasra. And therefore, she's not going to kill Jet. But either way, so the case is basically a case where she's a Zona, Bebe's Edim, for whatever technical reason, not getting a Chiyav Misa, at least at this point.
Let's say the Baal saw it.
Yeah. If the Baal saw it, how'd that matter?
It's the same thing.
That might be the same thing as Bebe's Edim. But either way, I'm saying, let's say there's no Hasra. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just answering. No, you're all good. You're good, Ezra. Okay. Yeah. So just getting back to that Gears of the Yerushalmi. So Rosenzweig, I think, didn't like that because it'd be strange to come out saying that there's no lav for sota. So rather, he read it as saying that, the ase and lav are both just referring to like the general iser sota, nothing to do with machzir grushaso per se, or the parsha of gerushin even, any time that a woman cheats on her husband and commits nos bebeis edim, so there is objectively always going to be an ase, an iser ase of some sorts, and an iser lav, a los ase. But then you obviously just have like a glaring question, which Rabbi Rosenzweig pointed out, if you have this read, which is, at the end of the day, so what's this doing in the Parsha of Machzir Grushaso? It's still strange that you'd have to have this whole Parsha of Machzir Grushaso just to tell you that in general, Sota has an Isser Asay and an Isser Los Asay Alav. What's it doing in the Parsha of Machzir Grushaso? The answer to that we will get to when we get back to Machzir Grushaso. Just to spoil it, there's a connection between Machzir Grushaso and Sota. But, okay, we'll get back to that. Yeah, questions on that.
I just flip. In terms of what the
ase
and the lav are,
when
you
just
restated,
so.
You said a lav of sota and an ase of sota.
There's an
ase
of sota.
And what's the lav?
The lav is also sota.
Not master Yerushalmi.
Correct.
So then Yerushalmi didn't even.
Yerushalmi didn't answer the question.
At all.
Exactly.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, that was his difficulty. Okay. Does anyone get that straight? Meaning, Yerushalmi's coming out just saying that.
Not focused on the Yerushalmi.
Correct.
There's a lot in the mouth of Yerushalmi.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Then we got that, meaning what the Yerushalmi comes out with that girsa is that there's an asay and a lav for soto. Nothing to do with machshir gushasa. So obviously if you have that read, you will then have like a massive question, which is how do we answer the problem of the Yerushalmi? Okay, that we'll get to. Is there another question?
That was shot in the Yerushalmi?
Rabbi thought that was shot in the Yerushalmi, yeah. Okay, good.
Sort of. How to answer the question?
How to answer the question? Good question. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, fine. So that is the girsa of the Yerushalmi. So then you have Tosos' girsa, which is similar but a little bit different. Tosos, instead of saying Asei v'lav, Tosos says that we're basically giving Beis Lavin. So I think this is Pashur, that is basically saying that there is obviously a lav and a los asay for the Isser Soto more generally. And then also what we're adding is a new lav of Machshir Grushaso. Again, it's all still within the same case where for Beis Shammai. She committed Znos Mamish Bebeis Edim, and then they get divorced. She has an interim marriage, and then he wants to bring her back as Machshir Grushaso. So there, basically, the Torah is giving Beis Lav, and it's adding on another lav. On which the Gilyon HaShash, Rabbi Akiva Eger, asks on the spot, he says, why would you give that answer? You'll end up running into a potential issue of Ein Isser Chalal Isser. The klal that one iser cannot be chal on the next. So in this case, you'd have an iser baal, iser labaal of sota, and then additionally, you'd have an iser of machshir grushaso. So, right, ein iser chal iser is just like basic principle that one iser can't be chal on the next. The classic example being like a behemoth tmeya, a non-kosher animal, can't also become an avela if it's shechted improperly. That's the classic example in the Gemara. That's ein iser chal iser. So that's the question of the Gilyon HaShas, how can a sota wife who already has an iser labaal also get an iser of machshir grushaso? So without getting into that too much, just like the roads I gave a couple of technical answers, which I think we're, for the sake of time, we're going to gloss over for now. But one of his answers is going to be based off also the connection between Machshir Grushaso and Sota, which hopefully we will return to if we have time. Okay, fine. So that is the girsa of Tosos. What's very important about these two, the reason why I'm not going to them so much is because what's really important about these two answers when you zoom out is that they don't reject the assumption of the Yerushalmi in the question, right? The big assumption is retained, and that is, in contrast to the answers that we're going to see in a second, this assumption is being retained that Beis Shammai thinks that the get is actually only chal, even b'dieved, in cases of Znus Mamish b'Beis Edim, and it's literally not chal in any other circumstance, which is a massive chiddush. That a get is actually only going to be chal in such a case. Yeah.
Can it also assume that we wouldn't have had a pasuk to teach us specifically in a case?
No, so that's what the Rashi brings up, but these answers don't touch on that.
No, but I'm saying the Yerushalmi could.
There's no need. You're right, but there's no need to say that.
There's no need not to say that either.
I mean, well, there is, just because there is. I'll get to it in a second when we bring up the Rashi, but saying that is a chiddush, and also doesn't really sound like what the Yerushalmi is asking.
Yerushalmi
is asking a substantive question. It's saying, where you can have a case where this lav is relevant.
Isn't it asking from lavshal Beis Shammai? I mean,
It could be.
Read that as,
you're right.
Yeah,
we're
okay. Not going to teach a pasuk for a case where b'dieved.
I'm saying that is what, right, that's what Pnei Yeshua says, but as we noted, it's a little bit difficult. Or it's just not what you'd say on the surface. Because at the end of the day, it's like, okay, so the psukim are referring to, what's wrong? What would be wrong with reading the psukim like that? Like, you could read the psukim in a weird way, referring to this other case. But, okay, fine. Anyways, yeah. So on the surface, it seems like the assumption of the Yerushalmi is being retained, that the get is literally only chal in a case of Znos Mamish, which is a massive statement about Beis Shammai relating to the objective standards of Ishus, literally only being able to be terminated through a get in a case of Znos Mamish, Beis Edim. Okay, so those are the first two answers. And then we have a category of answers which basically relate to that assumption, saying no, the get actually can be chal in other cases as well, not just in the case of Beis Edim Beznos Mamish. So we're challenging the assumption of the Yerushalmi. So the first is the Rashba and the Chidushim on Gidin, on the Daf, on Daf Tzadi, that the Rashba basically says that he's not even apologetic about it, it seems like. He says that the get can actually always be chal. B'dieved. And that the whole sheet of Beis Shammai is really only a lechatchila, but b'dieved, as he reads into the Gemara, which is interesting, I'll point out in a second, as he reads into the Gemara, we conclude that Beis Shammai is only a lechatchila, but b'dieved, the get will be chal in any case. You could divorce for any reason, and if you do so then it will be chal. Lechatchila you shouldn't have, unless you have Znos Mamish, but b'dieved can always be chal. And that obviously answers the Yerushalmi's question very simply. What's a little bit a chiddush of the Rashba, which I'll mention agav. I don't want to get into it too much because it's like pretty technical. This is where we invoke the Gemara in Temura. That the Rashba seems to assume that that is based off our Gemara itself. That the Gemara itself seems to say, the Gemara Daf Sadi seems to ask, what happens if you don't have lo matzah ba davar v'lo erva, or whatever, maybe the opposite, lo matzah ba erva v'lo davar. So mahu. So what's going to be the din? So the Rashba assumed that that whole Gemara is relating to this question, which is, let's say for Shitas Beis Shammai, you don't have erva or davar, so bidyevet, is the get still going to be chav? The maskana, what comes out, is that the get is chav, but it's a chiddush that the Rashba reads it in that way. As Rashi reads the Gemara, as referring to Beis Hillel, nothing to do with the chalos get bidyevet. For Rashi, that the Gemara is saying, in the case of Beis Hillel, let's say you divorce her when there's no akdichot havshilo for Beis Hillel, which is for sure seemingly going to be chal b'dieved, is there a chiyuv to remarry her, chiyuv lahachzir? That's the shak levitaria for Rashi, nothing related to this point about the chalos get b'dieved. Yeah.
There might not be a great answer to this question, but I'm still unclear as to how the Rashba reads this in terms of Gemara according to Beit Shammai. It says lo matzah lo erva lo davar, or whatever it is. It seems to clearly distinguish between two categories. There's davar and there's erva, which Beit Shammai doesn't do, right?
Uh-huh. I hear that.
Which is difficult.
Yeah. I have to think that it's difficult to read it in the Hemshech LeGemara anyway, but I hear that. Yeah, that could be what motivated Rashi. Because you're saying it says low, low.
Beis Shammai uses Dabar for 80, right?
Yeah, but that's not separate from Erva.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that's why.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
What is
the Rashi? As Rashi
says,
Beis Shammai.
If you just admit this, and if we could all sit down, I think I forgot to that Motsai Yom Tov, everybody who's available is invited to my sukkah.
Right. Okay. Right. Yeah, we'll send it out.
So I guess we usually do like an hour and a half after, or 2 hours after, you know, whatever it is.
However, okay. Is that an hour and a half? Maybe,
yeah, sorry to interrupt you.
No, no, it's fine. But okay, fine. That will come.
But if
we okay.
Send
it out, then. Yeah. Okay. Bro. Come on. Anyways, all right. Historic moment. I've never had that happen. Well, I guess because usually it's on Wednesdays when he's not here. So. Yeah. Okay. Anyways, yeah. So, yeah, it's a good question. Okay. So. Yeah, the Rashba was answering the question of the Yerushalmi by rejecting the assumption, saying that a get could 100% be chal b'dieved in other cases. And he somehow reads that into the Gemara on Daf Tzadi, that's what the Gemara says l'maskana. The reason why the Rashba doesn't like this answer, something that we just brought up, is that he says, e lo mishtoi kra, that it would be difficult to read the psukim in that kind of way, that the psukim are referring to a case where the get is chal b'dieved outside Beis Shammai standards of Znus Mamish b'Beis Edim, so he just says that it would be strange for the Torah to mention in that kind of context. Pretty sure Elo Mishtoi Kra is like a general principle that it's not just that we're looking for shot on the psukim, but more specifically, like the Torah wouldn't mention like a negative circumstance, so it wouldn't talk about a case where the Baal is doing the wrong thing. I think that's really what the concept actually refers to. But either way, everyone's like noted, and the Pnei Yeshua brings it up also, that rejection is just a little bit questionable. Based off how Elo Mishtoi Kra works in general, I don't want to get into that, but I just want to note that point of the Rashba is questionable. And being that rejection is questionable, so it brings you back to the Rashba's actual answer, which is that the get is not chal, that the get will be chal b'dieved in other cases, which leaves you with the question, so why did Yerushalmi say that answer? By leaving the Rashba's rejection aside, because it's difficult, how else can you reject that answer? So you could reject it by saying that you shouldn't challenge the assumption of the Yerushalmi, that we still retain the assumption of the Yerushalmi that the get cannot be chal b'dieved, and the Rashba is making that chiddush, but you don't necessarily have to say that for the Yerushalmi. Pashup shana of the Yerushalmi is still that the get will actually not be chal b'dieved outside cases of znos mamish. Hold on, just get you in a second. Okay, so that's the answer of the Rashba in the chiddushim. The Tshuvas Rashba also says something similar, not as expansive, saying that the chidushim, that the get will be chal b'dieved in all cases, but he is still somewhat expansive. The Tshuvas Rashba says that the get can be chal b'dieved in cases of Eidei Kior, where you don't necessarily have znus mamish b'beis edim, but you at least have, she's doing something that's like a little bit like a prutza, she's doing something wrong, you have edus on that enough can be potential grounds for gerushin, at least b'dieved. Okay, And then you have, similarly, the Gilyon HaShash, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, brings up a case of Hazama, also expanding Beis Shammai a little bit, saying that, let's say, the Baal divorces his wife on the grounds, on the basis of, there's no smamish with Beis Edim, but then there's Hazama on those Beis Edim, so then the whole thing is basically, seemingly, uprooted. So Gilyon HaShash says that, okay, fine, that's a case where the get can be chal b'dieved. You don't have 100%, there's no smamish with Beis Edim, because they were mazin. But at the end of the day, that's still enough somehow, at least b'dieved, for the chalos get. Okay, and then we're going to skip over the Pnei Yeshua's answer for now, but we'll get back to that idea. Okay, yeah, Ezra, you got a question?
Yeah. The first reading of Yishami gives the answer to the Chalos Jews or Ashkenaz. They expand the Yishami's
direction. You're saying before the line we read?
Yeah, I mean, the
first. Oh, interesting.
You mentioned in passing that, like, the Rikaz, some guy on the Yishami.
I thought he reads that into the line that we had.
Yeah, he reads it into the Gemara. I'm saying, why didn't we, like, what was our response to that?
Let's just.
Yishami just kind of.
Should very schwer read.
To the next with zero connection.
So I don't remember what came up right before that, but at least just in that line
that
a lot.
Came up before that was expanding Shitas Beis Shammai Dabar Shebe'erva.
Uh-huh.
I mean, sorry, expanding Dabar Shebe'erva with the Shitas Beis Shammai.
Right, okay. I'm not 100% sure, but I think the difficulty from what I remember is just that the line about Save Alav, it's hard to read that in.
No, I'm saying, like, why didn't Yerushalmi, like, why is there a gap in you? Why is Yerushalmi going from one city to the next? Is it
oh, like it's off topic, you're saying?
No, man.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. It's a good question. Yeah, okay, fine. So anyway, so that's basically one very important way to view Beis Shammai through the lens of the Yerushalmi. How expansive is Beis Shammai, or how limited is he? Similarly, another very interesting question to think about with Beis Shammai is the Rosh Hashan Gidin has a severe limitation on Shitas Beis Shammai. He says that Beis Shammai is grounds for divorce being about Znos Mamish Beis Edim is only true when it comes to Zivug Rishon. When he says to Zivug Cheney, Beis Shammai would be completely modeh. I think he says even to Rabbi Akiva that basically you can have very, very broad and expansive grounds for divorce, even Matzah Acheres Nahimena. And that basically seems to show you that at least for the Rosh Hashanah, likely, again, it's not Mukrach, but likely, Beis Shammai then would be a little bit less about like an intrinsic, objective institution of Ishus and Gerushin type thing, because you'd basically be saying that, oh, when it comes to Zivug Sheni, so then we don't have those standards anymore. And just in general, the chilek between Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni, I'll just throw out right now, Rebbe's like thought that it's harder to be mechalek between Zivug Rishon and Sheni on the grounds of like objective Kedushas Ishus. Likely, it's more likely that we'd be mechalek between them on the basis of like what can we expect out of this husband? Like, is it fair for us to expect that he's going to stay in the marriage for so long? If it's only a Zivug Sheni, seems like we'll give in a little bit and allow him to have a little bit of lighter grounds for gerushin in Zivug Sheni. But again, that takes a little bit of like the sting out of Beis Shammai's like extreme shita, focusing very much on like the intrinsic objective kedushas ishus. Okay, so that's shita's Beis Shammai. Moving on to the shitas of Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva. So again, the Pashtus, Pashup Shat, is just that Rabbi Akiva and Beis Hillel both think that the grounds for divorce are indeed trivial. Some may even say shallow. It sounds like, again, very surface level. And the evidence for that is, number one, the Sefer HaChenach and Sefer HaChasidim seem to say that pretty explicitly. They refer to the Shitas of Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva. I think the Sefer HaChenach says like it's a davar kal. He says like a filu davar kal. It's in the context of the Chinuch saying like why we give so much leeway for a Baal to divorce his wife on even very small grounds. The Sefer Chassidim similarly is in a different context, but the Sefer Chassidim also has a line where he says that Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva, it's like, oh, even Efti Yichtav Shilo and even Matzah Acheres Noimena sounds like it's just as they sound, Kipshuto, it's kind of like more trivial and shallow. Similarly to Pnei Yoshua, at least with regards to Beis Hillel, we'll get to Rabbi Akiva in a second, he's Mechalik between them. But at least for Beis Hillel, Pnei Yoshua says it's like a fleeting anger. It's here today, it's gone tomorrow. People get upset in the moment. But that seems to be something, Hektichot Tavshilo seems to be something that is shallow. Similarly, the Maram Shik seems to say for Beis Hillel that also it's like trivial grounds for divorce, in contrast to what he says for Rabbi Akiva, which we'll get to in a second. And a very important shita on this is the Rambam and the Perashah Mishnayos on Shitas Rabbi Akiva. That the Rambam of the Perashah Mishnayos basically asks on Shitas Rabbi Akiva. He asks on a Tana, which is very, very something very interesting that he does, I thought. That he just leaves it like Bedochak and thinks Rabbi Akiva is left Bedochak. And the Rambam basically asks on Shitas Rabbi Akiva, it's somewhat twofold. Saying, first of all, just Rabbi Akiva's issue, just on a technical level, it doesn't really seem to be that you need to divorce your wife just because you find someone else like more attractive or more fitting for you. Why don't you just marry the other wife as well? And then the Rambam adds, that's the second point, he says, after all, it's not like, you know, this is a case where your initial wife has like midos ro, or like there's an incompatibility, so why not just stay married to her? So we'll get to it in a second, but it sounds like he's alluding to like what Beis Hillel thinks, that Rabbi Akiva is like, you know, shallow and limited and trivial about like, oh, it's just matzah acheres nahimena. And it's not like it's like this bigger issue of like midos ro or incompatibility, which you might think for Beis Hillel. But either way, at least like Abi Rabbi Akiva, the Rambam seems to have a more like trivial view. Okay. And a big thing that we mentioned like at the beginning of the sugya is at the end of the day, like if you do think that this is pshat and Rabbi Akiva and Beis Hillel, that you hold that it's like very limiting and like it's more trivial and it's shallow. So just like at the end of the day, like how do you explain it? At the end of the day, we've shown like so many makoros that show that isha is something that's very, very chashuv and a davar shebekdusha. And like, we have these like very high expectations. So why would we just say basically like on a whim, the Baal could just end the marriage whenever he wants? It seems like we should have a little bit of a higher expectation. So everyone's like gave, just I'll say them quickly, because I think I mentioned them in the first Chazar Hashir as well. I know it's funny that we had that whole like, the other Chazar Hashir in the middle, that kind of like, it's like an interception between these two. But yeah, it's just like how it worked out. But yeah, so going back to the question, the fact that Rabbi Akiva and Beis Hillel can have like these trivial grounds, even though we have obviously aspirational orientations towards Ishus. So one point is just like a simple technical one, which is that at the end of the day, the way Rabbi Yitzchak formulated is that the Baal got married as an act of Bechira, he can terminate it as an act of Bechira. It's simply just within his right. I kind of see that as like, not in a technical sense, but just like as a parallel, like Pashas or Pashahitter, like the Baal's the one who had this marriage happen, he's the one who could terminate it. That's one explanation. So it's not necessarily like undermining Kedushas Ishus, it's just saying that like on a technical level, like the Baal should have a right. Second idea is like a little bit more of a psychological pshat that we quoted in the name of the Malbim, and we actually read in the Malbim also, that the fact that like even if the grounds for a divorce and like the exit strategies are kind of like trivial and shallow, just the fact that you can have exit strategies, and maybe even better to have them be easy, can actually in a way like help the marriage along. Because otherwise, if you think that like you can never get divorced, or there's such specific circumstances where you can get divorced, so then you might feel on a psychological level like a little bit imprisoned, that like, oh, there's no way out, this is, we're never gonna be able to get out of this, and then you can like kind of lose hope or lose a sense of like encouragement and investment in the marriage. So having like simple exit strategies can actually help the marriage. The third point was just the fact that Ishus itself actually has very high standards. And that's why we dafka say that in these trivial circumstances, that actually is grounds for divorce. Because if at the end of the day, this is the idea we're quoting from the Rav, that if at the end of the day, this Baal is thinking about divorce in these trivial circumstances, like she, you know, just like burned dinner, or he like walked in the street and like saw a woman that he found more attractive, or he knows someone that maybe is better for him, and he just like forgets about his first wife, and he's thinking about divorce in those cases, so that is like very reflective of and can possibly even facilitate like a very like a strong weakness in the like a serious weakness in the marriage, that it got to this point, or that it might get to this point if you continue to think this way. So that actually relates to like our high standards of Ishus, that like Ishus is a davarship kedusha, and if it's in this state, so then it should be ended. Okay, good. So that's all within the idea that Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva are actually like on the surface, and even as a shita, substantively, are like a little bit more like surface level and trivial. Yeah.
The last option was bringing back for Beis Hillel.
Well, I didn't say that, but are you adding that?
Is that true? Like conceptually, is more similar to what?
Yeah, doing. Yeah, that brings them closer to Beis Hillel. Yeah, exactly, because it relates more to high standards of Ishus in a very different way, but still. Yeah, brings them closer. Yeah. Okay. So that's all in terms of explaining Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva in kind of like a little bit more of a trivial way. So there are also those who explain that Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva are like broader categories, as you mentioned earlier, that Beis Hillel doesn't mean Echtichotav Shilo. And again, as I noted originally, I think everyone would agree that it's not just Echtichotav Shilo. Like if she also, I don't know, does something else that really bothers you, that might also be included. But there are Rishonim who expand it even more than that. They say that this is actually referring to like a very broad category of something that's really wrong in the marriage. So just to note a few, the Me'iri on Daf Sadi says that there's a sense of merit by the woman. He also says that she's like dafka, not fulfilling her roles that they agreed upon at the beginning of the marriage. So she's like doing things to spite him, and there's obviously like something really, really wrong and like hostile in this marriage that it should be ending. So Beis Hillel's not shallow at all, saying Etichot Tavshilo. No, it's just representative. It's a label for like this category of merit. Similarly, the Tur says that it's specifically pshia by the woman if she's like acting very negligent on purpose, again, because there's a sense of like hostility in the marriage and she's like dafka trying to spite him. So then that's grounds for gerushin. Also, the Lecha Mishnah seems to quote the Braisa on Daf Tzadi Amud Beis that has a line where you say mitzvah lagarsha. So the Lecha Mishnah is mecharish that potentially that can apply even to Beis Hillel. So everyone's like thought that was a little bit of a chiddush because you might think that it's only a mitzvah for Beis Shammai, which is like a contrast between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. But at a minimum, the Lecha Mishnah does seem to be saying at least something aspirational about Beis Hillel, because if you thought that it was like a very trivial situation, like, oh, she just burnt the dinner and that's it, it'd be strange for us to say that in that case you have a mitzvah to divorce her. Maybe you could say that he's allowed to divorce her, it's justified, but to say it's a mitzvah would be a little bit of a stretch. Likely, the Lecha Mishnah is referring to a broader category of where there's really good reason to end the marriage. Okay. And then also the Rambam Peirush Mishnayos that we already mentioned, he like very much downplays Rabbi Akiva and doesn't get why Rabbi Akiva thinks you should get divorced in that case, where it's like very trivial. So Rose like thought that you could be medayik that the Rambam thinks that Rabbi Akiva is in contrast to Beis Hillel, that Beis Hillel, the Rambam basically says for Rabbi Akiva, he's like, after all, it's not like we're talking about a case where there's midos raos, so like some incompatibility. So it sounds like maybe the Rambam Peirush Mishnayos is making an allusion to Shitas Beis Hillel, that he thinks that even though Rabbi Akiva is a little bit more narrow, Beis Hillel is in fact a little bit broader, referring to something really wrong in the marriage. What he's referring to there is like some type of incompatibility between them. Okay, so that's in terms of expanding Beis Hillel a little bit. Then in terms of expanding Rabbi Akiva, you have a similar phenomenon, where the Rishonim seem to say that Rabbi Akiva is not just Matzah Cheres Naimena, it's a broader category, even just Beshita. Like if you ask, what does Rabbi Akiva hold? Not like as a Svara. What does Rabbi Akiva hold? Rabbi Akiva would hold cases of grounds for Gerushin include more than just Matzah Cheres Naimena, that the Ibn Ezra says it's any type of incompatibility, something that we just said the Rambam Dafka says not in Rabbi Akiva, and maybe for Beis Hillel. But the Ibn Ezra does say that for Rabbi Akiva. He says that it's incompatibility between them. He says his lashon is hafach toldaso, that they're basically running counter to each other, and therefore that's a serious situation where a divorce should happen. Similarly, the Pnei Yoshua, in contrast to what he said that we mentioned before about Beis Hillel, he thinks that Rabbi Akiva is actually a case of sinah. There's grushas halev, so it's not just matzah cheres nahaymena. Or it might have started out as matzah cheres nahaymena in a technical way, in a trivial way, that he's like, oh, I find someone else better. But lamaisa, what that leads to is something that's really, really serious and that leads to a really, really bad situation in the marriage. So there's sinah, there's grush shalev, you should get divorced. Then finally, the Maharam Shik also contrasted with what we mentioned that he holds for Beis Hillel, that he thinks Beis Hillel is like trivial and shallow. Hishita is like, sounds like more trivial and shallow. So I'm not saying that Beis Hillel as a person was trivial and shallow. The opposite. But the Maharam Shik says for Rabbi Akiva, that again, similar to the Pnei Yoshua, even if it started out as something like shallow and narrow about Matzah Cheres Nahaymena, it might lead to something really bad. The Pnei Yoshua emphasizes that it might lead, that it's leading to like Sinah and Grushas Aleiv. The Maharam Shik emphasizes that it leads to Machlokas between them. But okay, either way. So what comes out is that you have for both Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva, or maybe being Machalik between them, as we noted in a few instances, but really for both Beis Hillel and Rabbi Akiva, you have this phenomenon where it could be that they're narrow, trivial, shallow, surface-level grounds for gerushin, or it's like a broader category, and that broader category is likely to say that it's more about kedushas ishus, objective standards for ishus and gerushin, and like when the marriage gets to a really bad point, so then we should terminate things. Okay. Although, again, even if they are like trivial and shallow, we gave a few explanations, three specifically, as to why even that is not like so shallow, they still care about ishus. Okay, so I think I'm going to run through the Maksha Grushasa stuff. It is very quick. I'm not going to go into such detail, but just like the Rashi Prakim, still have a couple of minutes. And you know, we started a few minutes late, as I continue to justify why it's okay to go over time, which I usually like, you know, wouldn't want to do, but I think it's important, like going to the break, that we just like get these Rashi Prakim straight. Okay. So there's Maksha Grushasso. So again, just going back to the Yerushalmi. So our Gersa in the Yerushalmi, Again, the question is, why for Beis Shammai is there an Isser of Machzir Gushaso if at the end of the day she's already ushered to him as a Sota, as a Zona, who committed Eishas Ish? And the Yushalmi has the Girsa where it answers, Lav or Lav, Balav Base. And the way of Rhodes is reading that is that the Yushalmi is basically coming out saying that there is always for Sota specifically an Ase and a Lav, but nothing about Machzir Gushaso. So as Rhodes noted, and as you guys were wondering, how does that answer the original question? So therefore, we were answering by saying that at the end of the day, the Yerushalmi is telling you that we have the Isser, Aseh, and Lav of Sota, specifically in the context of Machzir Gushaso, because, and you have to kind of like add this to the words that are there in the Yerushalmi, but like what it's getting at really is that the Parsha of Machzir Gushaso highlights something about Sota. The Machzir Gushaso shows you, as an Isser, shows you, or as a concept, shows you that we have more aspirational views towards Ishos, because the concept of Machzir Gushaso, for that to be a problem, is a chiddush, right? Like, no one would have thought that if the Torah never said it, you wouldn't have thought it. But it relates, as the Ramban al Torah said, it relates to the issue of wife swapping, as we noted in the earlier Chazar Shir, that it's undermining the institutions of Ishos and Gerushin, using it to just do wife swapping, musical wives. You're misusing the institutions of Ishos, and the Isser Machzir Gushaso reflects something serious about Kedushas Ishos, which would then be an appropriate parsha in which we learn out that the Isser Sota is not just an Aseh, but also a Lav. Just hold off on the question, just want to finish just this last section. Similarly, we noted that Tosos asks the question, Tosos has a different Girsa, he says Lav or a Lav, but Bebe's Lavin, that basically the Yerushalmi saying that Sota already has a Lav, but in the case of Machzir Gushaso, there will be an additional Lav. And then Rabbi Kiva Eger asks, in Isser Chal al Isser, how can you have the Lav of Machzir Gushaso be Chal on the Lav of Sota? So we gave a few answers, but one answer that Rosenzweig liked was that in Isser Chal al Isser is only true when these two Isurim have nothing to do with each other, such as Behemoth Tmeah and Nevela, the classic example, right? Those two Isurim are not really necessarily on the surface, so connected. So therefore, we'll say that a behemoth tmeah, a non-kosher animal, cannot turn into a nevela. But in this case, it would be very beneficial to have beis lavin. We would say iser chalal iser, because in this case, both Sota and Machzir Gushaso highlight two separate dimensions of Kedushas Ishos, as we just noted, that Machzir Gushaso is an undermining of the institutions to use it for wife swapping. And of course, the iser zona would of course also be like a gross undermining of Ishos more generally, that she broke the Ishos and went with someone else, and then you are basically going back and remarrying her. And then I'm not going to go through the details of the Rambam. You can go through it on your own, or if you have done most of it already, but I did outline it. But just to finish off noting the Shitas Rambam in terms of just like, let's just focus on the Stira between Isiri Bia and Nechos Gerushin. The Nechos Gerushin, the Rambam seems to be mashma that there is a Lav and Malkus for every single case of Isser Sota. Nothing to do with Machzir Gushaso on the surface, just Isser Sota, wife commits Nus, Bebe's Edim, Mamish, and to continue to live with her, you get Malkus. But in Isiri Bia, he seems to be mashma that he doesn't, at least in that case, he doesn't make mention of the Malkus, so it sounds like he thinks maybe there's just a Lav, but no Malkus. So how do we solve the Stira? So the Nosei Kelim give a bunch of answers, but one interesting answer that brings out this bigger Yesod is one of the answers given by the Kesef Mishnah, where he basically says for the Rambam, is there Malkus or not in the case of Isser Sota? Well, it depends. If it's just a regular case of Isser Sota where she committed Znus, Bebe's Edim, and then you try and continue living together, so then that's just a Lav. There's no Malkus, as the Rambam seems to imply in Hilchos Isiri Bia. However, says the Kesef Mishnah, if you divorce her and then you want to remarry her, there's not necessarily an interim marriage, but you at least want to remarry her. So in that case, says the Kesef Mishnah, that's where the Rambam and Hilchos Gerushin comes into play, that you will get Malkus. So Rosenzweig thought that was significant because you're basically having a strong connection between the Lav of Sota on the one hand and Machzir Gushaso. That dafka, the convergence between them in this case where she committed Znus, she left, you divorced her, and then you want to remarry her. It's a convergence of the Isser Sota to continue living with and being married to a woman that committed Znus against you, coupled with this case that somewhat Machzir Gushaso, you're trying to remarry a woman that you divorced. The convergence of those two things is significant and highlights that connection we mentioned just a couple minutes ago, that both of them highlight two very, very specific dimensions of Kedushas Ishos. Okay, so I'm going to end there. I just want to say shkoyach to everyone on a great zman. that everyone should obviously like take note of, like, all the hard work that you put in. For a lot of you, this is probably your first time. For most of you, it's your, for the guys still on the Zoom, it's your first time in the Shire, and it's definitely, I remember for my first days in Shire, it's really, really a big investment, and it could be a very, very big adjustment. And even though there may be times that you're more frustrated, think you don't understand things, you should really try and focus on the things that you did understand and have, like, a strong sense of accomplishment, and obviously only, like, looking towards growing more in the future. Okay, Shkaya Chai Zevon should have a Gemara Tov. Shkaya.